And now, the Big D and Bubba Weekly Podcast.
Big D and Bubba,
they
have a show 5 days a week, but they don't get to say everything that's on their minds.
But they have an extra one,
and that's how we get the podcast,
the podcast.
Big D and Bubba podcast, the podcast. Big D and Bubba podcast.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wait, we got to get the gold.
Wonderful.
And this week's podcast.
That's a new gold, by
yes,
the way.
It is. This week's podcast is sponsored by Match.com, where you can find your special someone. It just got easier. All you have to do is download their mobile app to get your matches sent directly to your phone. Also, if you're one of our listeners here on the podcast or viewers on Facebook, you can get 7 days free with Match.com using the mobile app by going to Match.com/Bubba. Match.com/Bubba. And check it out today.
Hey, in the studio with us for the podcast is Jared Neiman and Lance Miller.
Okay.
Lance, we may know Lance longer than we've known Jared.
I know we've known him longer.
I'm a lot older.
What year was Nashville Star?
2004.
2004, that's right.
Who else was on your season? We had
Brad Cotter won that season.
Where is Brad now?
Angry.
He's around town.
What'd you say?
Angry?
No, Brad, he always runs. You know, I love Brad. He's one of my honoriest buddies.
He's one of the most emotional people ever.
Well, he's the one who told me that I should get on the show. I ran into him at the brew house one day, and I was with my dad. Dad was down, of course. You know, that's what me and Dad do. We go drink when we get together.
What?
But Brad said, he said, you going to do Nashville Star? And I said, I don't know. And he said, I don't know much about it. And he said, you might as well do it. He said, we've been passed on by everybody else. This might be our last shot.
Well, he
so
won
anyway,
it.
He's been a dear friend but for a long time.
He won it and then kind of like, almost like it was like the worst thing for him.
Yeah, it was. I mean, you know, looking back at that, I understood some of his anger about that. He, you know, and I wouldn't say anger might be a strong, I don't think that was a strong word. I think he wanted to get out there and start working his single, and they had this kind of Nashville Star tour put together, kind of a Mickey Mouse Club kind of tour, you know, and he had to go on that immediately, these four ding dongs, and I'm one of those guys because I got fourth and got beat by a guy with a washboard, as you remember.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't remember.
The guy
that.
He had a washboard and he had a green hat.
Yeah.
And his name was?
Matt Lindahl.
Oh,
Matt
Lindahl. Yes. Matt Lindahl. Oh my God, yeah,
Matt Lindahl. And
he did milk commercials for a while.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. All he needed was that.
Turn Jared's
Bubba,
microphone.
Jared's mic's not on.
Oh, what? I'm sorry, dude.
Jared's
good grief. I'm over here talking to myself.
And
reminds me of my childhood.
By a wonderful Canadian friend. George Canyon.
I like George. George was like a nice guy.
George had a big career in Canada.
He was always walking out in the morning at that cast house. Everybody's just kind of hanging out and drinking. And just, you know, it was the first time we got to eat good food. We had good budgets to go buy groceries and stuff. But George would go out the door every day with a briefcase. And I'm like, where are you going? Oh, I'm going to meet with Bob Doyle or something. You know, he kind of had it going on.
Yeah.
And he looked like Superman.
he looked like Superman. Buzz Lightyear.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was crazy.
He was good. He's really good.
Buzz Lightyear.
He did.
Anyway,
there's a lot of good people on that.
Season. Yeah, they really turned out to be a okay thing.
So we had just gotten here. I went to every taping and every after party.
Oh, see,
it was the thing, man. It was the thing
see,
to
the
do.
After,
season two, Nashville Star was huge.
You experienced a whole different thing than I did because you went to every after party.
Everyone, yeah.
I just got to go to the one. You get to
go
to the one you got
voted. You get kicked off of.
The one
that's
you get
right.
kicked off. Yeah.
That didn't sound like a party.
It's not that fun.
Yeah, no, it's not fun.
It's like
you
a
just
funeral.
Got kicked off the show and
anyway.
You get to go to the party.
And pretend that you're in a good mood.
Yeah.
That is
oh,
how
no,
you know
they're great. Good buds of mine. I love them.
Yeah. Happy for everybody who's still there.
Yeah, so deserving.
The Warren Brothers got me off to a great start. They told in front of however many people watched that show. I always like to say 800,000 people. I'm not sure. That's probably more like
12
people, yeah.
No, but how many contestants were there?
I watched
I
it.
Think there was start. I think we had started out with 20, like the
so
first
So there was 40
episode.
People watching because all the parents were sure.
Yeah,
so there was at least 40.
Yeah.
There were always like 500 people in the room, so that counts.
Yeah. The Warren Brothers got me off to a wonderful start, and just a picture that nobody can get out of their mind when they said in front of however many people watched the show that I looked like Chastity Bono.
You know, I had forgotten
so,
that.
Yeah.
Thank you for reminding me.
Yeah, well,
that's what friends are for.
I mean, it was like I kind of knew it was over right then.
Hey,
I mean, I walk off the stage, and I said, "Who did they say?" And you can't really hear up there. Brad Carter said, I think they said Sean Cassidy. And I said, I think that would have been flattering if they would have said Sean Cassidy. But I'm pretty sure I heard Chastity Bono. And it was like, it was.
For the record, and I mean this in the nicest way possible, you're a lot prettier than Chastity Bono.
Yeah, he's a more handsome Tom Petty.
Right? Yeah, that's right, yeah.
That's I stole that from him.
I lost about 10 pounds, and I've gained it back, and I had breakfast with the Warren Brothers the other day, and Brett Warren, I walked in, he said, you look like Vince Neil.
Also,
it's a good thing.
I almost had coffee come out of my nose.
That was close.
And then he tried to tell me it was a good thing that I did. I don't think.
Well, like Vince Neil.
Like Neddy Pot.
Vince Neil now.
A Neddy Pot of
coffee. Yeah, that'd been cool, 1988, Vince Neil, but no.
Now you're Vince Neil.
You're Vince Neil after all the plastic surgery.
Not all that
and
cool.
But
Vince Neil still gets the ladies.
Yeah, because he's Vince Neil.
True that.
That's true.
Real quick, but I'm trying to tweet out and let everybody
know. Like Bona.
I'm trying to tweet out and let everybody know you guys are here. Lance, what's your Twitter handle?
I don't know.
Old school, he didn't have one.
What? You don't have a
Twitter?
I do have one, but there's a Lance. There's a Twitter out there with mine that Warner Brothers set up, but I didn't get it. Not that that's as long ago, but
isn't that awesome?
Yeah,
do Twitter.
Okay. I didn't.
It's gotta be liberating.
So OG.
Yeah. It was YouTube was kind of blowing up right then, so they sent me out with a kid. So there's tons of this crappy YouTube footage of me, like at radio stations playing the wrong chords to your song,
and a sweet MySpace profile.
So if you want to, a sweet MySpace.
Hey, have you guys logged in?
You'll get a happy birthday from me, man.
Come out?
Oh, I'm saying happy birthday on Facebook if it's your birthday.
Hey, I have a question though. Do you guys still use? Have you ever logged into your MySpace since the back in the heyday?
Does it still work?
I logged into mine not too long ago, and I swore like you saw tumbleweeds going by and things like that. But it was like really cool. I went there and I found like tons of great old pictures for Throwback Thursday and all that kind of stuff. I'm like, man, there's cool stuff. And your top eight is still there, and it's really like a time capsule.
Is Tom
still in my top eight?
I bet Tom is really upset.
I think Tom got screwed up. I think he got screwed over on that. They got bought up. Who bought? Didn't Justin Timberlake buy that?
And a couple of other people.
He did buy
together.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that wasn't a very strong investment.
No, usually he's pretty sharp on all that, but not on that one. All right. Well,
what about United stock plummeting?
You know what? If you were smart, you buy it.
Yeah, buy some. Let's all go buy United stock.
Yeah, it'll recover.
It'll recover. It's like a shoe-in.
People have short memories.
Another one is Bitcoin. You know what that is?
Is Bitcoin down right now?
No, it's like exploding. I heard.
It goes up and down. It's pretty volatile.
Really,
Bitcoin has days where it's like, and then days where it's like, don't do it.
Bless you.
Thank you. I had to burp, so I was trying to hide my little noises.
Speaking of United, did you see the guy, the doctor who they
Doctor Who?
They asked him, said, "What's injured?" And where are you hurt? And he said, "Everywhere."
Did they knock out two?
You know what, though? Yeah. Some lawyer told him to say that because that way they can't pin you into one thing.
That's what it said last night on the news. I mean, I obviously didn't see it with my own eyes, but they said he was missing two teeth.
Oh, I don't know. Okay, maybe he is. I mean, it was awful.
You think it's
they said he broke his nose. I'm just telling you. If I was in that, they pulled me off like that. If you are smart, you'd be back there beating your face in with a mallet while they're coming. You know, just like okay, it's gonna hurt, but it's gonna pay off.
Yeah, he's gonna have some diamond plated new teeth.
He's gonna I'm gonna guess that he will get at least 10 million.
It's an eight-figure settlement.
Was going to say 30 million.
Yeah, it could be, but
I think it's going to be in the range of something insane.
Right. Well, man, what a bizarre turn of events. I mean, those cops I'm sure they didn't even know the situation. We just need this guy to get off the plane. They probably thought he was just some drunk.
And they're the ones most at fault because of the way it was handled.
Well, that's why I think he's going to get 30 million suing the airline. He's going to sue the airline, the city, the airport, the state, the cops, everybody. There's a case against
United's
all that.
United's getting all the blame, but there's a lot of blame to be handed on the way it was handled by security. But this is the fascinating thing. I was telling the guys this yesterday. I saw the interview on ABC with the CEO, and they had this guy who's like a social media psychology expert. I mean, like, why did things like this go this viral? Uh-huh. And this one's easy when you think about it. It's because we all hate the airlines.
Yeah.
Yeah. We all hate.
Inherently. I don't really hate the airlines. Yeah, I like the airline. No, I hate TSA.
Well,
I hold a grudge against them because it just slows things down.
Flying? You've yeah. never had a terrible yeah. experience
I will, flying? I will be honest. I have, but it was not the airline's fault. It was just regulation's fault. The one that always sticks out in my mind is Big D and I getting stuck on a flight one day. It was a Sunday in Lubbock, Texas, and we were trying to fly home, and the airline, somebody on the plane coming into Lubbock, used some oxygen, so they didn't have full oxygen on board. So they had to refill the oxygen. But because it was Sunday, they couldn't get any. So they ended up, you know, they canceled the flight and everything. And finally, somebody got smart and said, "Let's borrow some from the hospital." So that's where they were able to do it. So we were able to get rebooked and out. But that's the only negative thing I've ever had. That oh. and sitting in the middle seat on a Southwest flight. And that's not their fault. Neither one is their fault.
Have you ever lost your luggage and had to deal with the people who couldn't care less about you to try to get it back to you? Have you ever
been
on a flight that got and you got bumped because of something stupid?
Well, D and I, we do carry-ons for everything. So, you know.
Yeah, it's just, you know, everyone has a horror story about flying. They broke your stuff, or they don't care, or they, you know, and they don't care.
Well, it's crazy,
right back down to booking a flight. You book a flight, look at the flight today, it costs this amount. The same exact flight, if I look at it tomorrow, it costs more. And all this stuff, and nobody understands it, so people don't trust them.
The only real issue I have with flying, I mean, just personally, is with the guitars. Oh. Southwest is awesome about it, but the rest of the airlines,
United,
there's a song on YouTube.
There's a song from 10 years ago.
And they look like you're bringing it. It's like when you're bringing a little baby on the plane, you know, when you got a guitar, they're kind of giving you dirty looks because, you know, you're going to take
a lot
of
your guitar's going to cry the whole time.
You're going to take up a lot of bend space. You know, I kind of get it, but I mean, I just don't want to check a
Delta.
You got to get one of those $2,000 one of those $2,000 cases.
Yeah,
you
got to get
over
a case
with the truck.
It's worth more than the guitar.
But what I like though is Southwest. Actually, they encourage you to bring your guitar on because they like people posting YouTube videos of your in-flight concerts. Have you not seen those? They're all over the place.
Yeah,
so on the flight, and they played and sang. Yay!
And you can't walk on a flight with a guitar and somebody not say, "You going to play us a song today?" You know.
Yeah.
I always say, "Well, if you want me to clear the plane out, I'll play something."
You ever done that, Jared? You ever played on a?
You know, plane? The only time I've ever played, I played on Air Force Two when we were headed home from, you know, playing for the troops.
Good name drop too.
That's the best name drop ever.
You forget how loud planes are. I mean, I was singing at the top of my lungs just for anybody to be able to kind of hear it. Mm-hmm. But that's the only time I've ever.
The worst, I forgot who it was. Oh, it was Aaron Neville. I was on a flight with Aaron Neville one time, and he gets on there, and they had him sing into the telephone that the flight attendant gets on, and he's like, "Look at this face." He's doing all that stuff, and like, it's just so crazy sounding.
That's really good.
Do that one song, your big hit, the Cotton.
That was pretty cool. I'm a big fan.
Where were you at? Were you in the Middle East or?
Yeah, we hit Kosovo, Kuwait, Afghanistan, and Romania.
What year was this?
Last year.
Oh, last year.
Yeah. So Air Force Two, you were out there with the vice president?
No, the reason we got that plane is we were rolling with a 4-star general that was a Joint Chief of Staff, Frank Grass. A lot of the other actors that had been out there before said that it's usually just like on an airline that you would fly, but since we had someone, you know, that had some
you flew
some clout,
with the brass.
We got to fly with the man, and he was such. I learned so much. I mean, you picture generally picture like Sergeant Slaughter or something, you know, G.I. Joe, but he was so just to see how intelligent they have to be because the diplomatic approach to every country is different. You know, there's different cultures, and he said he's been at dinner with three different like heads of countries that all hated each other, and he had to, you know, just be real careful. And it was really fascinating. But I'll tell you, that was my favorite week of my life.
Really,
was going over there, it was unbelievable because you meet these other entertainers and you're experiencing so much together, and you get to see our brave men and women be a fly on the wall there for a day and just get to really appreciate different layers to the onion that you just can only imagine until you get there. And man, I just have, as you guys do, just so much respect for our military. It's unbelievable. Them stuck over there.
Who else was there? With
him? Do you remember Robert Patrick, who played Terminator 2?
Yeah.
He was with this Matt Lillard, who was Shaggy on the Scooby-Doo.
Okay.
And he also did on Scream and stuff. Amazing guys. Then we had Sam Perkins, basketball player. You know, that's cool. And then who else? Oh, we had Tim Kennedy, who's a UFC fighter that also is Special Forces. He's like the top five snipers in our country, and he's like just a lethal human being.
Mm-hmm.
And every day what he would do is everybody would get on stage and kind of have their own thing. He would show people how to choke people out, and then he would trade kicks. He's like, all right, let's trade kicks. So he'll let one of our troops kick him, and then he'll kick him back right in the leg. The first two guys he kicked in Kosovo and Kuwait, they had to be carried off. So I just had I wrestled my whole life, and I took some martial arts when I was a kid. So I thought, man, I know you'd kill me, but I just want I want to take.
Just one.
So we wrestled up and down the jet. Like we broke loose.
What?
And then, so the last day I was hanging out with
some
Marines.
You wrestled an MMA fighter on Air Force Two.
Several times.
I'm just going to go with that's the best story.
Why is
story
it not on
ever
your Twitter? That should be your Twitter handle.
That should be your Twitter bio right there. Once wrestled MMA fighter on Air Force Two.
Yeah, and luckily he didn't break my neck like he, I'm sure, could have very easily. But the last day, because he'll say on a scale from 1 to 100, how hard do you want me to kick you? So the last day I said, I want you to kick me. And he's like, what's the scale? I said, 100. In front of all our Marines. And
oh, God, what's wrong with you?
He kicked the hell out of me, and I just looked at him, and I was like, man, that's embarrassing, dude.
Well, did it hurt?
Yeah, it was so weird. He kicked me so hard that it never bruised on the outside. It just, I could tell my bone was bruised. Like my bone marrow had a bloody nose.
But you're telling me you stood there and took it like a man and acted like it didn't hurt?
I desired it. I wanted
it. So
oh, man, that's jackass
so
stuff.
But
right
you're
there
so weird.
Yeah, I can't argue with
that's
that.
That's hilarious.
But great, I'm telling you, great, great, great guys.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool.
Maybe we should all go over there together.
Yeah.
Show some love.
Dude, we've been trying to do that for so long. But you know, we're the official country morning show for AFN, American Forces Network, which means like every ship at sea, the space station, we think we're going to find out. We got a buddy of ours going next month.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I want to be an astronaut so bad. But like, you know, every base around the globe, you know, families of the military who are in Okinawa or whatever, just people everywhere in Africa and all they have to do is flip on their AFN decoder and they got us. So we're like, man, we really should go out and do something like that. Let's go to Gitmo. Let's do this. But every time we start the ball rolling, for some reason, we hit a wall, and then it just stops. I don't know. I don't know how to get the next step going. Because I see radio people doing it. And it's like radio people that, you know, you go, well, why are they there? Boy, we should be there.
That's right.
Well, if you're listening to this, USO.
Yeah, we really would love to do
it. We got your next crew.
Yeah.
The funniest story is...
I mean, why not do the show from, like, the carrier deck somewhere or something? That would be so cool.
So cool.
Patrick, do you remember the story of Rafi May telling us when he went over there in the helicopter?
Yes, my favorite story. You know, I heard him tell that story twice. Once to us, and then only one time on stage did he tell the full story. Because four of the guys from that helicopter crew were at Fort Campbell, and they had come down to see him. And because they were there, he told the story.
The real story.
He said that he's sitting on this helicopter, and they're going to go from one base to another. And if you don't know, Ralphie is big. He's bigger than me. And he said, and this would probably be me now if we went. He sat down in between two Marines and watched them strap in, and he's going, the chopper's going. It's real loud. He said this big sergeant comes over and he's screaming because of the chopper. He goes, son! We do not have any equipment that can effectively hold your big ass. So, these two Marines are going to hold you the entire flight. It should be okay.
Should.
Because if we have to make a hard turn and you roll toward that door, you might not fit out of it.
So, man, I met him one night. He got Rob Beckham, who... co-runs WME, our booking agency. They did a roast one night and asked me last minute to come be a part of the roast. So Chris Young, Rad Paisley, and Ralphie May was the MC. So I didn't know I was dead last. And so I was sitting there for a couple hours and, you know, start drinking, laughing. I was like, man, I kind of want to get up there. So by the time I got up there, I was a little tipsy.
Yeah.
And I forgot his name. And I called him Ralphie something. Like I can't remember what I called
Ralph James.
But he called me Drunky Brewster.
That's great.
He's a funny dude.
Have you ever done an actual spit take? As I have only done it one time.
A what?
A spit take where you're drinking and you actually laugh so hard that you are.
Letterman used to do the spit takes a lot.
It was Ralphie. This was an unscripted joke. And again, I only ever saw him do it once, and I've seen him on stage a dozen times. He said, "You got to be careful." I was at this place down the street and I ordered the hot wings. And he goes, "They were real hot on the way down." And I thought I knew the rest of that joke, which was they were hotter on the way in, and you go, "They were even hotter on the way out." Right. I got it. That's what's coming. I should be safe. I'm going to go, you know. And so I'm like, "Oh, that's fine. I know where this is going." No, he immediately goes, "Ah, crap, the devil."
I have Ralphie's number. We should call him and say him that we have Drunky Brewster with
us. Oh, my gosh. He probably remember that one.
Here, let me see if I can't.
That's hilarious.
Unless he's used it a bunch.
Yeah, he's probably like, "Oh, which one?"
That's his code for everybody who's drinking.
So when you call me in the mornings, it's just kind of fly by the seat of your pants, kind of
This is exactly how it goes.
Yeah, that's not planned out.
No.
Yeah.
Planning would be responsible, you know, well-prepared.
I think that's one thing we're not.
No.
We're just in it for the fun.
He's not going to answer because it's the number he doesn't know.
Yeah.
He didn't know the box number. He knew myself, maybe. But.
The box number. Text him and then see and just tell him to call back that number.
Yeah, I'll get back to him.
Okay.
Anyway, so I know you got God Made a Woman. We talked about that on the show, and I didn't realize your wife is in the video.
Yeah.
That's cool.
She makes it worth watching.
Did you tell Lance my predicament Facebook with
No, you got a predicament.
What I had? Well, it was weird. Like, I was weird. You know how Facebook is? It pops up those things like, "Hey, you may be friends with this person," and there's like a list of
right,
them. And
right.
You kind of scroll through them, and oh, I do know that person.
Right.
And it was weird. Like, there's a lot of things, and she kept coming up with friends that, you know, because we're kind of the same, hang around the same types of people and whatnot.
Sure.
And I just thought it was weird for me just to like Jared, you know, to friend her on Facebook. It was weird. And so I called him and I was like, "Hey, man." And it was like this big,
it was like this big thing.
I was like, "Hey, man, listen, just if you're not cool with it, just say it. It doesn't make really that much difference."
He's asking for your wife's hand in friendship.
Right. And Jared's like, "Frick, I don't care, man. Do what you want to do."
I know. It's like he has a guilty conscience already.
Good. That's what I'm
like
thinking
that.
It is.
So, and it's a like thought that counts, you twisted.
That is hilarious. It's old school.
Lance, what are you doing? Are you just writing mainly?
Yeah. I'm doing wrote this grouping of songs with the Warren Brothers and a guy named Jeremy Spillman, who's a great songwriter. I'm going to head it over there after we visit here this morning and singing a little bit, but mostly writing, you know.
What's some of the songs he's been working on? Some songs that think are going to make it or have made it?
Oh, gosh. Well, I tell you, I couldn't sing it to you if you held a gun to my head, but there's a song we just turned around called Tan Lines and Tequila. I've sent it out to my whole friend list of artists, and I haven't heard anything back. Well, I need to send it to you.
He said he sent it to his whole list, and then he goes, "Oh, I need to send it to you."
Nice to know you're not on that list, isn't it?
Jared's such a great writer, and I never know what he's done or not done, so I don't want to.
Well, you know, he wrote "Drink That All Night."
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah, the Warren Brothers and Derek George. Derek George did the whole entire demo, and I don't know. I don't tell the story very well, I don't think. But I do remember this part of it. I just thought, I think Jared's going to think this sounds great, but I don't really know if I honestly thought he would. I don't know how I presented it.
He sent me an email that said, "I doubt you'll like this, but check it out." Yeah. Which is like perfect to reverse psychology.
I just thought the demo was so good that I just wanted one of my friends to hear it, that I was actually connected to something that I had nothing to do with. I mean, Derek George did the whole thing. It was just great.
And what was funny is I wasn't going to record that. We were going in, and it was like on the short list of like 10 songs. But the song I was going to record, those guys wrote too, called "I Ought to Be Dead." And I flipped out over it. And I was like, man.
Yeah.
And these guys, I'm sure they probably wouldn't appreciate me telling the story.
But they don't care.
But they turned it into their publisher, and their publisher was like, they said, Jared already put this on hold. And they're like, man, we haven't even pitched it to like McGraw and those guys yet. So they took it away from me.
What?
Because,
ouch.
Because I wasn't a big enough artist to have their song. So instead of being a baby like they were, I just said, all right, well, this next best song is The Strength of That All Night, which they wrote too. Instead of being like, oh, I'm never going to record one of their songs, I just recorded that one. So it ended up being the right move anyway. And
yeah.
And then no one else cut that song. So now I have it back.
Wow. Oh, wow. Wow. That's wow.
Yeah.
See, that's how you handle that kind of stuff.
See?
A level head, you don't get.
Yeah, he always does. I mean, I was the one that kind of had to break the news, you know, like, I mean, like I told him, I said, man, they're wanting to, I said, you know how these publishers, they want to run it around and try to get it with the big artists, which you kind of know that passion wins. If somebody jumps on it, you better just sign off on it.
And
let's
I said,
say, let write the next one.
I said, no one's going to cut that.
And
besides me, because it's too, it was just got too many crazy lyrics in it.
And so Jared,
it's crazy.
He said, well, Jared, he kind of got quiet and I don't think he would have hit me, but you never know. I mean, it's like, I'm thinking of that left hook and I'm the one delivering the news, but he said, well, I'll just cut that other one then. So I took the news back to everybody, you know, that was concerned about that.
Please
other
tell
piece
me you
of
built
crap.
It up into something more.
Yeah. Well, no. And I just came back and I said, well, I got the news out about the other song, he didn't punch me over it, but I said, he's cut Drake to that all night, you know, because we didn't even talk about that song. So, you know, it worked.
Yeah,
out.
So I at the number one party for Drink That All Night, I told that story.
Of course he did.
Where'd you do that at? At the what?
And those guys.
Oh, the number one party.
Number one party. And like guys, whenever you get a number one song, they throw you a party.
And those guys give people so much grief. You know, they're hilarious.
They're fun,
and when there's two of them, it's hard to go up against them because there's two. And they're both so witty and smart and funny. But so I enjoy pecking at him a little bit and giving him a little taste of their own medicine just because, you know, we don't take ourselves.
They say Jared's the country. They like Jared a lot. They see Jared's the country hinder guy, the lead singer. I can't
just
because
he's a
he's the
wild animal.
They just love that. You're the only one that really could kind of hang with those guys. And
well, they're not as
keep up.
They're not. Their bark is worse than their bite for sure.
Yeah, they're sweet.
I love songwriting stories about songs ending and how certain artists end up with certain songs.
Yeah.
You know, fascinating things like that. Oh, God, I've completely lost.
Did you guys hear that? That was a brain fart.
It was.
It stinks.
Usually
too.
It's me. Usually I'm the king of the
was
brain
that
fart,
the,
man.
Did you eat some wings, hot wings going
I
down?
I did.
The devil!
I was going to tell a story and then it totally blanked on me. No, Mark Chestnut was telling us a story about, I want to say, I'm trying to remember the guy's name that wrote the song, and it's really killing me. Dennis Lindy.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So Dennis Lindy, his publisher, he's one of these guys that wrote the massive, iconic song,
Burning Love by himself when he was 17.
All by himself. He never co-wrote. Almost all of his hits were by himself. So they were working a record around town, the publisher was working other records, and while they were at it, they would break the ice by playing this Dennis Lindy song to make people laugh. And they played it for Mark Chestnut and his team, and he went, who's cutting that? They're going, oh, no one's going to cut this. It's just too weird. No one's going to sing. It was Bubba Shot the Jukebox.
Yeah.
They were playing that as like an icebreaker, like a listen to this. You never believe what Lindy wrote. Listen to this. And, you know, they play that first, and everyone was just laughing at it, not taking it seriously. And Chestnut... I want to record that. No,
and
you
now,
don't.
If you actually go see, you know, Mark Chestnut, you'd be bummed that he
that's
didn't
one of
sing
his,
it.
That's one of his marquee
that
songs.
One.
That's really, that's, you know,
man,
a tentpole record.
He just put out a new record, and he recorded a song that I wrote with Jamie Johnson and Randy Houser years ago called Is It Still Cheating? And we were at the Frank Brown Songwriters Festival. Oh. This is probably like 2005. And we were in three separate cars driving, and Jamie calls us like on three-way, and he's like, hey, I got a song idea. So we start writing the song, all driving behind each other, and we got finally to a point.
You drove it in, I mean, you wrote it while in traffic?
On the interstate or highway. Okay. So all three of us were on the phone. We finally pulled over at Arby's and pulled a guitar out and finished it in the parking lot. Over a roast beef and cheddar, curly fries. And so Mark Chestnut, the song, you know.
Great record.
Yeah, so he ended up recording it after all this time, and it was really awesome.
It's like
to have
superpower to be able to write songs. I mean, like, you guys, you write them all over the place. You're sitting on the toilet, driving in traffic, you know, camping, whatever. It's crazy.
It is a superpower.
When it hits you, you guys just do it, and it's magic.
Yep.
I Big D and I, we couldn't do it to save our lives.
All the stuff you guys come up, you're basically writing.
Yeah, songs. No, it's different.
It's different.
Because we couldn't do that.
I was, last week, I was driving in my neighborhood, and it's going down the road, and there's a guy cutting his grass, and I pull up to him, and I start clapping like this, and he's laughing, he comes over here, it's Don Schlitz. And I said, dude, congratulations on going into the hall, and I said, that's huge.
It's so huge.
And he goes, oh, I don't know if y'all know Don, but he's super cool. He's like, good. Oh, well, thanks, man. You know, I'm done. I'm just.
He's like, oh, he's great.
He's just like, you know, I'm going to let these young guys do it now. I'm just, you know, I'm going to go cut my grass and, you know, watch my Duke Blue Devils and, you know, that kind of stuff. And I just said, I don't understand. Like, you know, it seems like the songs that are coming out now, while they're great, they're missing some of them are missing a soul.
You and I talked about this on a flight. We were flying in the plane 2 weeks ago, and we had this exact conversation. It is, you know, like, I have no problem with the newer pop country music. I have because I love that stuff. I know we were talking about something earlier. We were talking about Body Like a Back Road, and I love that stuff. But at the same time, we're missing the stories. You know, there used to be, we would listen to country songs and it would be this story and it unfolded and it was like a mini movie in 3 minutes. And
that was some of the songs, but then there was just the authentic heartbreak songs.
I don't think we can have,
we're missing those too.
You got to have balance. And I told him, I said, listen, when you do, you know, I said, when you write The Gambler, they actually did write a movie around that, like that a real movie.
Several movies.
That's, you know. And I said, you know, that's one of those songs that, you know, we aren't, I don't know that we're getting a lot of those kind of, they're being written. Jared Neiman's and your Lances are writing them, have the ability to write them, but we're not really,
they're not getting cut,
the market isn't ready for it.
Well, that's not what sells records right now.
Well, it's so tough to get a writing deal anymore. The people are writing what they hear on the radio. And so some of those guys that are like Harley Allen, who's passed away now, but he was just so capable of ripping your heart out. He wrote, you know, Baby for Blake Shelton and Little Girl for John Michael Montgomery. Just songs that have those stories.
Great songs.
I remember the first or second time I went to Garth Brooks' house when I just moved to town, which was crazy still to even say. I feel like I'm lying, but I got there and I was like, are you okay? He goes, man, I just got my heart ripped out by a Harley Allen song. My God.
Wow.
And just those kind of guys are tortured souls right now. But I feel like what's crazy is, you know, country music clear back to the 20s has had, it ebbs and flows that way, where it goes more pop. And then when our country, it seems like when we go to war or just if our economy's down, people lean on country music for those stories and to kind of soothe the soul. So I think here pretty shortly, if we had this conversation in about 5 years, I bet it'd be a 180. You'd be like, I miss that.
You know, I don't know, but we've been having this conversation.
You're talking about
my auto tune?
I need my auto tune.
I need that down.
I definitely welcome auto tune at this stage of the game.
We've talked about this. So we've talked about this on and off really for 15 years now.
No, it hasn't been that long.
No,
it really hasn't been. 15 years ago,
okay,
it was
10
still,
at least.
Yeah, what was the song that really kind of started it up?
Save a Horse, Ride a Cowboy broke the mold and allowed that allowed the party song to really grow
Cruise.
To a new
it
level.
Took years. But it was Cruise. And that was Cruise. Just 5 years ago.
But there would have been no Cruise if there wouldn't have been a Save a Horse.
Yeah, but
and
it,
I'm not blaming anything on anything.
What I'm
I
saying
love
is
those
it
songs.
Didn't open a floodgate like Cruise did. Within 6 months of Cruise, there were 25 songs that sounded very similar to that. Mm. And it was... Yeah. It was a lot of the girl. What is it with the girl? Look at the top 50 right now. There are 10 songs in the top 50 with the word girl
still
in the title.
That was last year.
No, that was 3 years ago, and then it came back. Now it's doing it again.
Maybe it's a summer thing. Like, you know, as everybody's trying to get their summer singles out, you know, looking for a song to blow up, that's what they're doing.
And there's something to that, you know?
It's a mood. People like it. So
about Schlitz, dude. I think of funny. You know,
the beer.
The Warren. Well, yeah, that too.
Love Schlitz.
The Warren brothers write with Don, and he still writes with certain people. You know, and he loves the Warren brothers because he loves their humor. But if Brad will come up with a line, and he'll come up with a line, Don, and I say, I don't know, and oh wait a minute, I wrote The Gambler. Who wrote The Gambler? Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was me that wrote The Gambler.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Dude, that's his whole thing. Craig, you know, it's just so funny.
I heard that Craig Wiseman, every once in a while, is a joke. We'll be arguing. He'll be arguing a line with somebody, and he'll pull a Grammy out.
My, I hope that's true. I
my line, oh, I can see it.
Thinking of Don's songs, let me give you, I'm pulling up the list of what he has done.
You know that, you know, besides The Gambler, what was that song about the little boy that's pitching and he strikes?
The Greatest.
Yeah, he wrote that.
You know a funny story about that? I did a video for my boys when they were little. They were playing baseball. And so I wanted to do a video based
on... Oh, man,
that's going
to rip your heart out watching that with your boys playing ball.
Yeah, so I did this. I shot it over several weeks of them and his team. I mean, he was little, maybe six or seven or something like that.
It was a great video.
And I had it all done. Like, it took me to edit it and put it together. It took me months to do. And I'm sitting there with my wife, and I said, what do you think? And I let her watch it, and she's like crying, you know, tearing up. She's like, oh my gosh. And I'm like, yeah, it's pretty great. It really is. And she goes,
yeah.
Did you, what's that song? I go, you know what? That's Don down the road. He wrote that. She goes, did you get his permission to use it? No. And I'm thinking, you know what?
Don's a good guy.
I'm not going to get his permission for a video I'm doing. It's just for me.
Good for your wife. We need to get her a.
BMI
needs your wife right now.
Kid you not. I'm like, well, if I see Don in the neighborhood, I'll ask him. I'll bring it up. So I never see him. He kind of stays to himself and his wife, and they just kind of, you know, do their own thing. That next day, I'm outside pulling the trash cans back to the, you know, house. Guess who comes up walking? Don.
Like, you feel like you have to address
I see, and I'm like, holy crap. Are you kidding me, God?
The guy you never
you just
see.
Sent Don Schlitz to me like this? And so I'm thinking, okay, well, let's just go. So I'm like rolling out. He goes, Derek, hey. I'm like, oh, really, God? So I come back, and I go, hey, Don, what's going on? Oh, not much. How's things on the radio? Oh, yeah, it's good. I said, listen, hey, Don, I got to ask you something. He goes, well, go ahead. I said, you know the song The Greatest that you wrote? Yeah, yeah. I said, listen, I got to be honest with you. I'm thinking about doing a video, and I would love to use your song in it. And he says, well, heck, of course. I don't care. Go ahead and use it. He goes, I appreciate you asking. Normally, it's the people who do some kind of big award show on network TV. Those are the ones who don't ask. They just use it. I appreciate you at least asking. I'm like, well, tell you what, I'll let you know when I get it done, and I'll send you a copy of it. He's like, oh, I would love that. So 18 hours later, I sent him this video that took me weeks to do. And he was like, wow, you did this quick.
You work fast, my friend.
That's awesome.
Paul Overstreet and Don Schlitz, you know, wrote tons of great songs. When You Say Nothing at All, On the Other Hand,
oh, yeah.
Forever and Ever, Amen, all
oh,
those songs.
Oh, my goodness.
Quite a run of them.
So when I first moved to town, I was writing for Billy Joe Walker Jr., who, you know, played and produced a lot of stuff. And so a lot of these songwriters really have a lot of respect for him. So he was like, well, who do you want to write with? And I was kind of kidding because I just didn't think there was a chance in hell. But I was like, oh, you know, Paul Overstreet, Dean Dillon, Larry Cordell, Aaron Barker, you know.
Yeah.
And the next day he had me set up with all of them. And I was like, God. About to have a panic attack. So the another character flaw that I have is when I get into a room with one of those guys, I just ask them, okay, how was this song written? How was that song? And I'll just spend the whole day getting stories, and it'll be 4 p.m. and we haven't even played anything.
Mm-hmm.
Ruined my chance. But I was asking him about Don Schlitz, you know, Paul Overstreet, and he said there was I think On the Other Hand, Paul, you know, everybody was young and, you know, hitting the honky tonks back then. And he said that he woke up and was hungover and called Don and said, man, I'm going to cancel today, dude. He's like, I stayed out pretty late last night. I'm not feeling too good. And he said, get your butt out of bed, go take a shower, whatever. You'll just get over here. And that happened, I think, twice. And they wrote On the Other Hand and then, like, When You Say Nothing at All. And just think of Paul Overstreet would have, like, not showed up.
I know.
Wow. Those two.
So that's how close we were to not having that.
And that Storms of Life album would have been completely different without On the Other Hand on it. That, to me, is still...
Yeah. Oh,
that Randy Travis Storms of Life may be quite possibly the greatest one album of that era.
It was huge.
From song number one to song 12, it's just perfect.
Did you ever hear Keith Whitley's version of that?
No.
On the other hand?
No.
Man, Keith Whitley had recorded so many songs.
Was it a demo, or did he actually do it?
It was released. That was on one of his albums, but then there was some other stuff that was released posthumously, like he recorded Brother Jukebox.
Yeah, Brother Jukebox.
She'll Leave You With a Smile.
Does Fort Worth ever cross your mind?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's Right Mind Would Have Left
Her. Chestnut had a great cut of Friends in Low Places, but what an unfortunate miss out.
That's my songwriting icon story. I had lunch one time with Earl Budley, and he wanted to ask me questions about what I thought about music nowadays, whatever. It's about 5 years ago, and I'm just waiting. I'm like, before this is over, I'm going to ask him what it was like to write that song. And I was so afraid because I knew it was going to be like, well, it was Tuesday and we were supposed to write a drinking song. So we were over at ASCAP, and I just didn't want it to be that.
Right.
And I said, that's the most iconic song of my lifetime. That's it. That's the song. Okay. It is. Of the last 30 years of country music, that's the biggest song there ever has been. What happened? He goes, well, I was in a bar. And he told me which one, but I can't remember. And he said, and I went to pay the bill, and I didn't have my wallet, and I didn't have any money. And I was sitting there, and I was already having a pretty bad day, and I was like, it's okay. I told the waiter, it's okay. I have friends in low places. I know the cook. So he wrote that down on a napkin. So I wrote that title down on a napkin at a bar when I couldn't pay my bill, and went and wrote the song the next day. Thank you. That's all I want. I needed to hear that you wrote that in an organic way,
So he just came up. That wasn't like a phrase that he had been tossing around with buds or anything. It was just he said it on the spot.
He said it on the spot.
Out of embarrassment, his wit saved it. Man, so Earl Budd is, what a stud. But back when I first moved to town, I had lunch with him too. It started out, I didn't know him. I just was sitting at a table with mutual friends, and everybody else left. And it was just him and I.
Could be very awkward.
And I was like, because you're sitting there with the man. And he's so, for everybody out there that has never seen him, he's got this long, curly hair.
Very frizzy, curly hair.
Just like Robert Plant a little bit.
It looks like he pulled it back in a ponytail while he was still asleep.
Yeah.
That's like he really didn't try.
And do the story. I don't know if he'd want me to tell this story, but I was like, so what have you been up to, man? He's like, well, I just got back from camping. I was like, how was that? He's like, well, I took my lady, and we met this other couple there. And a little bit later, I felt someone rubbing on my leg with their foot, and I noticed it was the other guy's girl. And he said, well, that's interesting. He goes, so my girl went up to use the restroom, and her guy went up to go do something, and they were just by himself. And she holds open her hand, and she goes, hey, see these two little blue pills? She's like, put one in his drink, put one in her drink. They'll go to sleep, and then you and I can be together.
What?
And I said, well, what happened? He goes, well, I took them both. And I woke up in a hammock 3 days later. I was like, my man.
That's my man.
My man. Wow.
I'm not sure you were supposed to tell that story.
Roger Miller good story.
I wish that was my story.
Have either of you ever pitched your own songs to an A&R person? Some had that meeting, that uncomfortable pitch meeting.
Oh yeah, like if you go see.
Yeah. They're not so uncomfortable anymore, but they were at one time. Renee Bell, who's a great friend of mine. I mean, I as far as the business goes, I'd see her out and everything would be fine. And it was just part of our march together through the music industry. But I would go play her songs, and it was almost like we just had never met, So I think it's a little more the Wild West out there right now, but I think there was a protocol, I go far enough back now in this where there was there wasn't a back door you could go through. You had to go through the front door, and you had to know those people. And there was, even though you might be friends on the outside when you were at that record label, that you felt that.
Like you walk in and
have their guard
just
up a little bit.
I don't feel that as much anymore. Maybe because I just don't care.
When I moved here, I wanted to be a songwriter. So I had written songs. I was a rock and roll singer back in college, and I had written some songs, and I had song ideas for country songs too. And I was like, I'm going to do this. So I had kept pushing to try to do it. And then the pinnacle of that was that I got a song pitch meeting at Warner when Tracy Gershon was the head of A&R.
I
had that meeting with her, and I've known her since Nashville Star season two. And we were buddies, and I was like, this will be fine. I mean, if it doesn't work, it's not like she's going to rip me to shreds. Oh, no. It was. Here's a list of reasons why no one is ever going to cut this song. Oh, yeah. Okay. It was nice. It was not at all rude or, you know, but it was almost Simon Cowell-ish. It was like, no. What's the next one? No.
Yeah, she was tough on songs. She was a good song picker.
Yeah. She's like, do you have anything else? And I had only brought my three best ones. And I'm like, no. She goes, okay, yeah. Well, you know. Don't give up. I'm like, really? I think that was the last time I ever tried it. Yeah. That was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, the worst is when, you know, someone, you know, as a songwriter, for a song, you know, to make it all the way to the top of the charts, the journey for some songs is pretty amazing because, you know, if you're a songwriter and you only know someone at the, I guess, the bottom rung, mm-hmm. you know, it has to work its way up before it even gets sent out to the artists on a comp, or it may even get through their management. I mean, it's amazing that any song gets recorded and then
right.
it come
That's
out
the truth.
And people have to care about it, gravitate towards it, and you know, everybody at radio give it a chance to be heard. It's nuts.
I'm thinking that if somebody would like to be a very successful songwriter, that they should play on my softball team first, because Rob Hatch came from my softball team, Jordan from Walker McGuire. They came from, I mean, there's several people that have played ball with me and have had to leave our team to go and do, you know, big stuff.
Was Rob the bat boy?
No, Rob.
Oh, no.
Rob was a good player, man.
Rob is a good player.
No, he's
good.
He was my roommate for 6 years, so I can give him some grief.
They go way
yeah,
back.
He is. He was, a pretty big stud in football.
Rob's at it.
Didn't you tell us
right
off
now.
The air one of his songs was like in the drawer for 10 years?
Yeah, if Heaven Wasn't So Far Away.
Oh, my God. I mean, yeah.
Actually, Red Akins had cut that and put it out as a single probably 10 years ago. He got a deal on RCA briefly, and it fortunately didn't see the light of day it should have. So it was, I was glad.
I always talk about Old Red is my favorite example of a song that is an iconic mega hit that will be played for the rest of time.
Yeah.
That was recorded twice, not by nobody, by George Jones and Kenny Rogers, two of the best country singers ever. And nothing, you know, nothing. No one thought it was good enough to even single it. And no one remembers those recordings. And then a guy who was still basically an unknown new artist put his own spin on it, and it was a massive hit. So it really is that magical kind of the right person finds the right song at the right time.
But you know, and I've listened to those versions, and especially the Kenny Rogers version sounds
very different.
I was going to say very similar.
Oh, no, like, you're thinking of the Jones, maybe.
Or George Jones. Yeah. One of them sounds just like the Blake version. I'm like, man, the arrangement, everything is the same. Why was this not a hit for him?
Yeah.
You know, it's a little bit, there's a little something missing from it.
There were people that had, Johnny Russell, I don't know if you remember Johnny Russell, but he Stopped Loving Her Today out, you know, as a single, and it went in the, got in the 50s or something, and petered out, and then, of course, George Jones had the big hit. But, you know, there's just songs like that. Well, have to find the right artist for George Jones once it gets to George.
What's this story? I can't remember what it was now. It was the Zach Brown Band. Remember Zach was like...
Zach wrote...
Toes.
No, Chicken Fried.
Chicken Fried.
Yeah, yeah.
What was
Lost
that?
Lost Trailers.
And Lost Trailers recorded it. And Zach, the deal he made through his publisher with them was that they could record it and put it on the album, but that we would not release it as a single. And then they released it as their first single.
Oh, wow.
And that is an insane thing. You are an unsigned, unknown artist, and he fought it. And people told him, this is going to ruin your career. If you fight them on this, if you force them to pull that single off radio, no one will ever cut your songs again, and you'll never get a record deal. And if you do, you'll never have a hit. It'll never work for you because the whole industry will be against you. And, I mean, Lost Trailers, that was RCA, that was Joe Galani, one of the most powerful people in the music industry,
especially
not just in country
time.
Music, at that time. And he fought it, and he won. And they pulled it as a single, and then he, on a little independent label, you know, released it himself. And guess what? His version was a little bit better, and his version was authentic because he wrote it, and it went to number one. And Zach Brown has, you know, that Zach Brown Band's had, 20 top 10 hits since then?
And same with In Color with Jamie, you know, after he left BNA and had written, did his own album, someone behind his back pitched In Color to Trace Atkins and he loved it. They recorded it and Jamie found out and he was, you know, upset. I mean, obviously he's grateful that, you know, someone like Trace would record it, but he was like, guys, I'm telling you, this is my album. It's my song. So, I mean, because people were getting mad at him. He's like, how can people get mad at me for wanting my own song? So Jamie put it out as a single and, you know, won Song of the Year and all that, you know, mm-hmm. and Trace, it's the last song on his album. It's
still. Have you guys ever had something that you were holding on for yourself that you said, this is going to be my song, and somebody came and scooped it out from under you and, you know?
Nobody wanted my songs that bad.
sorry to laugh, Lance, but it was funny.
No, you know, I guess not. There's been times where I'll like write a song with someone like Lee and then neither of us cut it and someone like Blake Shelton will record it. And it's just bizarre. But it is weird. Once one of you wants the song, then it kind of makes the other person in their mind want the song too.
Right.
It's just kind of weird. But no, I mean, for the most part, it's all, just like anything, transparency and communication, usually that stuff won't happen. Or if you just scare them a little bit, a threat usually works.
A letter.
Threats are underrated.
Stephen Lee Olson is a Canadian songwriter who moved to Nashville to be a singer-songwriter and had one song that he would not pitch to anyone else because he knew it was a massive hit. And they had, I think his telling of the story, they had several people through his publisher contact him by that song, and he always turned it down. And then Keith Urban called. Keith Urban is Stephen's idol. And it was like, oh, God, he had to, you know, he's like, can I call you back tomorrow? That's the song. I'm going to use that song that's going to be what makes me a star. But it's Keith Urban, and he's my hero. And so he said, I will let Keith Urban cut that. He's the only one. And that's Blue Ain't Your Color, which is probably going to end up being the biggest hit of Keith Urban's career. You know, when it's all said and done, that might end up being the biggest hit.
That's probably a good call on that.
The You'll Think of Me was number one in several formats.
Yeah. But this, so, I mean,
I think you're right. It hits that thread that never goes away.
And I love that it's a 6/8, you know. It's like a waltz.
It's a waltz. And the whole, but yeah, and so he told that story at
I said,
number one
like
party.
I knew what he was talking about.
I know. I was like, wait a second, Bubba. He just said, He said 6/8.
He said 6/8. I'm like, yeah. I was thinking,
I was going, ding,
I'll give you a dollar right now. You know what that means.
Isn't that the little ding, 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 ding?
He probably knows what 6/9 means.
6/8, he should be a basketball player.
6/8.
Yeah, it's funny how they got to kind of find their singer.
Trace Atkins had that happen to him at least three times that I know of, because he cut
Breakdown Here,
and it got released in front of him by Julie Roberts. So then he cut Jamie Johnson just told, and I know he had because he used to put a lot of stuff on hold early because this had happened to him several times, and he put Almost Home on hold. And when it was released, Craig Morgan tells the story. He found him at a fair, at a festival. They were playing together, and someone warned Craig, Trace Atkins is looking for you, and he looks ticked off. They cornered him. He goes, how the hell did you get your hands on that song? And Craig goes, I wrote it.
Yeah, he wrote it. Trace
went, good song, and walked away. I was certain I was going to get my
That was another one where Craig was bold on that. I mean, George Strait wanted to cut that, too. Yep. I mean, Craig, that was a good example of
that's
like
the song that made Craig a star.
The man wants to cut your song, and you're like, and your co-writer's probably thinking George Strait wants to
George
cut.
George Strait, man.
Yeah. But Craig stood his ground, and it was a great big hit for him.
More importantly, who wins in a fight, Trace or Craig?
Listen, ooh, that's
hey,
the thing.
You know what? First, I would put
money on Craig. Don't tell Trace I said
that. I wouldn't count Craig out of anything. That's the truth.
Man. My money is on Craig.
I'm the only one in this room who has been personally knocked unconscious by Craig Morgan.
That is true.
So I am putting money on Craig.
Oh, you don't know that story?
No.
You gotta tell that story. I don't know that story.
Yeah, so Craig comes in. He's kind of a new artist. It might have been that song for all I know.
Oh, yeah. And we knew he was an Army Ranger. And he said something about stuff. And, you know, this was before MMA was huge and that we all knew you could put someone in a sleeper hold. So, this is like more than 10 years ago.
Hey, Bubba, call Craig. Craig has got to tell the story.
I'm using my phone to film.
Let me get him. Because to hear it,
Yeah, Craig panicked. Like, seriously, get him on the phone.
So I was like, he's like,
don't tell the story, Dad. Dummy. I'm trying to get him on the story. Well, if we can't get Craig to tell the story, because I'm telling you, his version of the story is 1,000 times better
Craig
than
Craig is a good storyteller.
Sure. Yeah. There was one night I did a show. It. If he answers, I'll shut up.
But Bob, I'm just going to call him on my phone. That way he knows the number. And
plug
just
in here.
Right here.
And we'll just do it. Now, you guys won't be able to hear him, but
that's okay.
Yeah, we will. Well, you won't be able to talk to him.
That's okay. Unless you just tell him you're going to call him right back. Hello?
I hear him, but okay.
Oh, really?
Don't worry. You're going to hear that. I'll shut that down.
Yeah, if he doesn't answer, I'll just
come on, Craig Morgan, answer your phone.
But, dude, it's so great because, here at hindsight now.
Yep.
Hey, this is Craig Lee.
So, Craig comes in, and we're talking to him about. Go ahead, Ben.
I was just going to say, I thought the sleeper hold was a made-up wrestling thing. Yeah. I've seen Brutus the Barber Beefcake put people in the sleeper hold. And
the miser or whatever. Yeah,
and then he cuts their hair. That's not real.
So one of us, it might have been Bubba, is like, how many ways can you kill someone? You know, he's like, oh, you know, all these different ones. And I said, dude, can you put Patrick in a sleeper hold?
Can you knock him out?
Can you knock him out? He's like,
yeah, buddy.
Yeah, I can. So I'm like, all right. So he goes, we're on the air, and he goes behind Patrick, puts his arm around his neck, and gets, I'll never forget, because he went really, his shoulder went really far in. He went really deep, and his arm came around, and then he took his other one and cinched it up like a vice. And Patrick's just kind of, you know, there, and Craig's like, all right, just relax. And then all of a sudden, Craig changed. Like, he changed.
He
like,
flipped the switch. I have the audio.
You have the audio?
Have the audio.
Yes.
Bear with me. It's going to be crazy because I have to fast forward.
I don't know. I haven't heard this in 10 years.
Who knows? Let me get to it. Hold on.
No, I'm talking about.
Pretty much.
Neck
it don't hurt.
It don't hurt. It doesn't hurt. I don't care.
This is how they do this because, you know, Craig Army Ranger Craig
Bubba.
Here is to demonstrate how our boys and girls are doing it overseas.
Right before puberty.
Non-lethal, man. This is awesome.
This is, yeah, do it for America. Okay, now here's
for
what we
America.
Do.
For America.
All right, no, relax. Okay. Relax.
Uh-huh.
Okay, right now Craig has got his arm around Patrick's neck, and he's squeezing him.
Oh, God. Dude, is he going to kill Patrick?
He's going to kill Patrick. Okay, there goes Patrick.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. All right, baby. Come on, get up.
He just.
Here's Patrick just got knocked out by Craig Morgan.
Wait.
Oh, my God.
What did you feel?
Dude, his eyes rolled back.
Sit down. Have a seat.
Our producer Patrick just got knocked out by country star and Army Ranger Craig Morgan.
Wow. Patrick,
okay, so
that's like 13 and a half years ago.
You were
like
snoring.
November
Patrick was snoring. He hit the ground and was snoring.
Crazy.
He was. I'm not kidding.
He wakes up, goes, I
you
feel
couldn't
great.
Hear it.
Here's how it felt to be me. I remember him grabbing me,
right,
and then like you immediately start dreaming. Because it's weird. I don't remember being knocked out.
He went that deep. He was dreaming instantly.
My next memory is Craig nervously laughing, standing over me going, hey, buddy. Hey, man. Come on.
Slapping
okay.
his face.
You heard it on tape. You're all right. Get up.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Trying to wake me back up.
Yeah. So Craig, he grabs me. Patrick kind of puts some. He goes, yeah, man, that kind of scared me because there's about 1% of the population that doesn't come back. Like, and he was thinking, when I couldn't get him to come back around, I was thinking, oh, that's this it, Craig. That's how it ends.
I'm still in a coma right now.
My favorite
dreaming
part.
Dreaming all this, aren't I?
Patrick's life and Greece, both dreams. No, my favorite part, though, was this. When Patrick first came to, it was this.
He was a puppy dog.
This is before people
it looked
had
like a drowning his puppy.
Doggy paddling.
So unfortunately, it's before, you know, we had video cameras on our cell phones and we would have had video of it.
I know.
So
I
has
know.
Your voice changed that much over the years?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Bubba's, oh my God.
But here's the thing. I had to
Are you taking hormones or something?
No, there was a technical
transitioning.
Reason. There was a technical reason. Because of the way we used to have to do the show back then, I had to match the same vocal tenor every single time. I trained myself mentally. Stay where
he's
you're
always
at.
Up here.
He's always up here.
So, thank God we were able to change the way that we used to do the show so I could actually go back to being normal again.
It's also 13 years ago, and his voice got deeper.
Not much.
Mine does.
Dude, Trace, we were doing a show together, and same thing happened. Someone came up and said, "Hey, Trace is looking for you." And I was like, "Okay." So he comes up, "Hey, can I talk to you for a minute?" I said, "Oh, damn." I was like, "Sure." And he's like, "Man, I hate to even ask this, but
you got to go lower."
He can't go lower.
"Hey, man, I hate to ask this, but would you take a picture with my daughters?" I was like, "Thank you, Lord." Because also, other than just being a big dude, someone you respect that's had such a career like that, that you don't want anybody like that to ever be mean to you.
Right.
You hold them up, put them up.
You never
want to
meet your, and my dad always told me that, never meet your heroes because they're not going to be what you expect them to be, and I don't want you to be left down.
I've heard a lot of those kind of stories.
I've luckily never had a bad experience with a hero. I've had some times looking back that I think, man, I should have. Like Charlie Daniels, I groomed him one night at the BMI Awards, really late night,
Yeah.
So I can't imagine what he thought about that.
Well, I saw
it. But he was awesome.
Yeah. Have you seen the Deepwater Horizon movie?
Yes.
In that movie, there's a scene where Trace Adkins kind of throws Mark Wahlberg
around.
He throws Marky Mark around like he is a doll. And he throws him up against the wall and he's like, "Where's my son?" And man, I'll tell you what, that will scare you. Because you know right there that Trace has that in him to be able to pull it out for that movie.
That's a man that's been shot, stabbed.
That's true.
Yeah. Ran over by a tractor.
Worked on those oil rigs.
I mean, seriously. You see it right there.
Ocean and all that.
Now, I don't know, man. Now that I'm thinking about it, I think it would be a tie between him and Craig.
Okay.
You backing down?
Let's do this. What about Toby Keith, saying. Trace Adkins?
Trace. I'm going
Toby
Trace.
Toby Keith was a roughneck, too.
Yeah, but I'm still going Trace. Are we talking Toby in his prime and Trace in his prime? Because that's a different argument.
That's a different argument.
But the thing is, also point out though, I see Trace Adkins and Craig Morgan as like that scene in The Princess Bride where he's on Andre the Giant, and he's just on his back in the sleeper hold. Craig's on Trace's back trying to knock him out. Trace is bashing him against the wall. It could be interesting, but I think he falls asleep
before it's
over.
Really, and he's a sweet guy, but he really is just a natural kind of a fighter. I mean, a good physical fight. He could have been a good boxer as Daryl Worley.
Really?
He was really into MMA, too. He trained.
I put my money on him.
He started his own MMA dojo, I think.
Did he really?
Funded a couple of local fighters and stuff.
I remember him being very tall.
He's 6'7", but he moved like a little guy. I mean, he just had a really good, he's just real athletic and really, he's fast and just.
Jared, was that Krav Maga?
Krav Maga.
Wasn't he doing that for a while?
Well, he had a Chris Barnheiser and Ed Clay, two different fighters, out just basically working out together, but a lot of it was around boxing and stuff. But I don't think he actually ever really took like a class. He just had someone kind of showing him around just for exercise. But Lee, he's a big boy. When I get to wrestling around with some of my friends, I'm thankful that I wrestled for 15 years because it gives me the upper hand if they've never wrestled.
Yeah,
but you just don't want to get on the, like Lee. He played for Clemson, so he's and he's so nice, and it's good that guys that are pretty big like that are nice.
Yeah,
it's always good because it sucks when they're not.
I can see him. I can see him turning it on. I can see that. Switch.
I think everybody's got that switch, though.
Probably so. Some people don't.
Dude,
man.
Randy Houser has like that. He has like that farm boy strength. I can't imagine
him getting mad.
We were in the tin roof one night, man. and this guy, two drunk guys, start fighting, and this one guy is just beating the hell out of the other guy to the point you're kind of like, oh, start feeling bad.
Yeah.
Randy walks up to the guy that's winning. Grabs him by the back of the shirt and his pants and just marched him out like he was 13 years old. Threw him out of the tin roof. Said, "You want to pick on a real man? There's one standing right here in front of you." And that guy just like walked off.
I fully believe that he's that strong. I just don't see him having that snap and
He's like a gentle Ben, though. He just does it in a gentleman kind of.
If you were to disrespect a woman or something like that, Randy,
you know what?
That's when you see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's such – I used to tell him, I said, out of all of our friends, if I had a daughter and she had and you know, it was all the same age, you know,
yeah,
I would pick Randy to be the
– What a fun game that is.
And there are some that if they were the only ones left, last man on the earth, I would demand a recount.
Yeah, he's a great dude. You know, it's funny.
He is a great dude.
Talking about guys who respect women, I'll never forget, Bob and I were in Memphis for – Bob and I are on the St. Jude
advisory
board.
Oh, that's great.
And every year we have radio come in to Memphis, and it's a
visit
week.
The hospital. You guys have done the tours,
right? Oh, yeah. It's a weekend country care seminar. And so we always have a surprise guest speak on Saturday afternoon, and no one knew who it was and who is it, who's going to be. It was Marcus Luttrell, Lone Survivor, Marcus Luttrell, those who don't know him. And he gets on, they introduce him, he walks on stage, and he's real, you know, kind of very low key. And we're in a conference room. It's not real big.
Like a ballroom.
Like a ballroom, exactly right. Yeah. And there's a lot of people in this ballroom, too many people. So there are people who are standing on the wall in the back and whatnot.
That's where I'm always at.
And I'll never forget. It made, sometimes, you know, we get caught up in the Snapchat, Facebook, hey, I want to be cool world. When he got up there, it brought me back to the America and the way I was raised and the way I believe, my core. When he gets up there and he says, hey, before we start, there's any women who are ladies who are standing up, guys, get up and let them get your seat before we get going. I'll just go ahead and he just stopped and stared at me.
You made him sound way countryer than he is.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And
that's good.
Everyone like looked around.
And nobody got up.
Yeah.
He goes, nah, I'm not joking.
Yeah.
Up. And nowadays, like, I know there's a lot of times like rental car places are the best when you have to take a shuttle bus to your rental,
right,
you know, from the
right
airport.
And you don't leave the lady standing.
If some lady comes, I just get up. Yeah, get up and go, hey. And there, what's so weird is that women, guys have gotten so far out of that women don't even know what to do.
Like,
and they almost go, no.
I'll just stand here.
And I'll just go, listen,
that's what happened
there. I'm not sitting
day.
Down. So,
yeah.
So go ahead.
That happened the other day to Big D. And the lady's like, no, I'm standing. And he's like, well, I'm standing too then.
Yeah.
So there was an empty seat on the bus.
So just sit there.
Yeah, man.
But yeah, it was so great. I always remember that about Marcus. Marcus has been in here many times. And I think I brought it up to him. He doesn't even remember it. But
just part of who he is.
Yeah, that's how he is.
If he didn't remember it, that's clear. But man, it's always nothing wrong with being a gentleman.
Nope, not at all.
And it does blow my mind how that could get lost so quickly.
It's been chipped off a lot. I don't know what, you know, it's a real thing. Isn't
well,
it?
There is a, and I hate saying it because it goes into that whole, you're buying into it, but there is a war against, and I don't want to say men, there's a war against the old way. There's a war against chivalry. There's a war against whatever. And it's not a male thing,
war.
A female thing. A chival war.
I'm writing it down. I'm going to write a song.
How did I not think about
I'm writing
that?
A song. I'm going to have it out tomorrow.
I am like the king of throwing those out there, and you beat me. Dang it.
Just call me Dallas.
So, but there's like this thing where it's, if you're chivalrous, I opened the door for a lady one time, and she's like, you can go. I went, no, I'm going to wait until you go through. She goes, no, you can go. I said, I will sit down on this floor, and then we'll see what happens. She goes, I'll sit down too. I said, okay. I sat, she sat, and we looked at each other for 20 minutes until finally she went, I'm going in. I mean, there we are, sitting in the door of Chili's.
That
she
is
wouldn't
the greatest
go in.
Story
I'm
ever.
Like, I am not moving until you go through. I'm holding this door for you.
She's like picketing outside with a chivalry of the circle around it across the room.
It's weird, though.
16
like,
years old, I opened the door for a lady at Walmart and got yelled at.
Let someone do something nice for you.
Being sexist. Yeah. Well, so
I hold doors open for men, too, especially older men. Elderly, you bet I'm going to wait.
Yeah,
and what's worse is, though, you hold the door open for somebody older, and they start to shuffle, that little shuffle run.
And
you're like, no, slow down. I got time. You're good.
I think a lot of us had jobs that made us that way, too. I used to carry out groceries. So, but and I work, you know, if you let somebody go out the door carrying their groceries, you got yelled at. You know, nowadays, I mean, nobody, I don't want to make carrying out my groceries anyway, but that was a thing, you know, back then. They didn't, you know.
Yeah, that's always weird. Like when I go to Publix and I'm going to grill out or something, I'll go through line and then there'll be a girl or a guy and go, hey, you want help with your groceries? And I'm always like, man, honestly, I can handle it. But I mean, I said, I don't know what to say to you. Like, do you want to get out of here for a, I mean, what should I say? Because I don't know. Do you just want to get out?
They probably think you're going to give them a little tip.
Well, they don't accept them.
Oh, they don't?
Do you feel safe right now?
But I just thought, man, if it's a nice day, they're like, yeah, it's good to get out and get some fresh air. But I always feel.
I'm going to start saying yes. You need some help? Yes.
But if it's raining.
Yes, I do.
They're not yet.
And then
they don't do it.
Maybe just let them. Maybe just let them get to the door and like step outside and go, hey, did you really want to help or do you just want to kind of get some fresh air? I wanted to help. Okay, well then, good. You're good. But yeah, I wish
I knew if anybody out there.
There should
bags
be a
groceries,
code word.
Let us know what we should do on that because I can handle my groceries.
What is the code word, man? That's we got to work on that.
Oh, hey, Craig is in Kansas.
Oh,
I bet he's where Rob is.
Oh, at the turkey hunt?
Is he at that national turkey hunting?
I bet he is.
Aaron, look, can we call him?
Bobby
call
Pinson.
Call him from the hotline now. Tell him we're calling. That way we can.
We're calling you.
He's such a great guy.
Craig's the best, man.
He really is.
Such a great guy.
It broke my heart. He just did, you know, speaking of the USO tours and all that, he just went to a bunch of different places, but he went to Guam. And I used to live in Guam, and I've been trying to find a way to get back to the island forever. And we had talked about getting on this tour with him a year ago, and then obviously events in his life changed, and I didn't want to hound him about it. And I missed a great week-long trip to Guam.
Oh, he's at a turkey hunt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He goes, I'm on a turkey.
Hey,
man. Shh. Hey, it's us. It's hey, it's us, Jared Neiman, Lance Miller, and is Rob with you?
Huh?
Rob Hatch.
Is Rob Hatch
is Rob
with you?
Hunting?
No, he's not with me.
Okay.
Are you on a turkey right now?
Yes.
You're sitting. Are you sitting by a tree with your back to it?
Did what?
Nothing.
He's definitely not with Rob if he's on a turkey.
Hey, Craig, okay, we'll be real quiet, and you too. We were just telling Lance and Jared about the time you choked Patrick out. And it
wasn't my fault. I didn't know Patrick was that weak.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
I'm just kidding, Patrick. You know I love you, Patrick.
I love you too, buddy.
Yeah, the best was... When he dropped, Craig was like, oh, my God, I didn't realize he weighed that much.
I've done that a bunch. And hold on now.
He's what?
Hold on.
He's calling in right now. We're going to hear him shoot one.
If you kill a turkey while you're on the phone with us, you are my hero.
It's going to happen.
I'm going to let y'all go.
All right. Well, I hope you're having more luck than the time Bubba and I went with you. God, what a waste of my afternoon that was.
It was horrible. I owe y'all a good one.
All right. Yeah, you definitely do. Kill that.
Yeah.
All right, kill that one.
I love you guys.
Just choke that turkey out.
All right.
I think that has a different meaning.
Choke a chicken, but never a turkey.
Right. Okay. Bye, Craig. Yeah, we went to. Okay.
Good to see you. Good talking to you, buddy.
Yeah, Bubba.
Yeah.
Big D, I love you guys.
Okay, love you too.
All right, we'll see.
Knock him dead, Hoss.
That's great.
Yeah, we were hunting with him, and I'd never been turkey hunting. I didn't realize that you have to, and I still don't even know that this is the absolute truth, unless maybe he was just pulling one on me, where you everything has to be camoed, like gloves.
I don't think they're messing around with their hunting.
I had a veil.
Turkeys are real smart. Or their vision is crazy good.
And we go out there and we're in full gear and it's hot and I'm fat and it's just, it sucked, man. And he goes, all right, let's just.
You're my kind of hunter.
All right, let's just. We're going to sit right here. Now we're doing it for his TV show. So he's got another guy who's like, the film guy. And he goes, like, I'm going to go down over here on the other side of the holler and see if I can't. I don't know what he's doing. And so they put a tripod and a camera recording, and it's just sitting on us. And we're just leaned up against this tree. and ants are crawling up my butt crack. And I was like, dude, this. He's doing the whole, you know, thing, trying to get, you know, boys, I don't know, man. This is supposed to be a really good valley. I'm like, dude.
At what point do you really start to think, are we being punked?
I've had 45 minutes into it, just sitting there. I'm like, okay. He goes, all right, listen. I don't know what's going on. I'm gonna go over and see what's going on over here. So he goes over there. Bob and I are sitting there. I go, dude, this sucks. He's like, oh, man.
No, I was having fun.
I was. So he, I don't know, Craig made, he hate me. Maybe I shouldn't tell the story, but I will anyway. So he comes back and he goes, oh, I love doing this. He goes, so they get all this footage. And that we take the footage from the cameras and then we send it off. And these guys have to sit in a room, in a dark room, in these studios, and they just go through and they just watch footage for hours trying to piece together a TV show. He goes, so I'm going to give them a little something extra so when they get this. So he goes and stands in front of this camera, drops his pants, and full frontal nudity right into the camera. And he's like, oh, he goes, hey, boys, this is the only turkey I've seen out here today.
Turkey leg.
Giblet.
And I was like,
dude, let me ask you this. Did the drapes match the carpet?
No. I didn't see it. I was behind him.
Thank God.
And
you're behind him.
Then he pulls his pants up, zips up, and he just laughs.
Man, we do this Alaska fishing trip every year, and Craig came out and brought his camera guy. And
yeah.
And we cut loose on this trip. I mean, if you want to see some people in some rare form, like bears are the last thing that you got to worry about. It's your friends.
You're right.
And Lee Bryce, everybody's out there. Uh-huh. Well, I get in a boat with Craig, and I'm ready to have some fun. So I'm cutting loose, and that video camera's going the whole time for like 3 days. And Craig goes, man, Jared, you're a funny sucker, but I don't think we can salvage any of this footage. He's like, what? You know, the stuff you've said. And I was like, oh. Well, send it to me. I'll salvage it. But
they actually did salvage some of it.
Did he?
I think. Yeah,
I never
showed,
got to see.
Yeah,
it.
I saw a little bit of.
Yeah,
it.
You're a funny sucker.
No, they showed you guys on that trip.
That's beautiful out there, isn't it?
Oh yeah,
in Alaska. I've never been.
Oh man, it's so gorgeous. It's.
I think Lee sent me a picture of some big gigantic fish.
Yeah.
I know Rob did because Rob Hatch was with y'all on that, and we were talking about him. He sent pictures like for 2 or 3 days. That's all I kept getting in my text messages were, look at this, look at this, look at this.
Yeah. Was he sending you pictures of my fish and act like he
probably.
Was?
Probably.
You know?
I've been on two of them, on two of those trips. They're fun.
Man, it's awesome. I mean, but it's nuts. Like, you'll walk like a half a mile through these trails that the wild animals created.
Wow.
And, you know, everybody has a... You know, one of those 50 cal pistols, the 500s that
just
kill
case.
A bear.
Yep.
And Lee likes to shoot those and shoot weird stuff like a pea stream. He shot his own pea stream.
How just much alcohol?
That's what friends
How many
are
beers
for?
Do you have to have?
Hey, y'all.
Jared,
know
you
what's going to be funny? Oh, no.
I've heard of swords, but
yeah.
I haven't heard of that one.
You know what beats a sword in a fight? A gun.
Never bring a gun to a sword fight.
We used to play Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters.
Yeah, where you try to cross the streams and you
know.
My god. Oh, like the oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Right,
and then
right.
Somebody always ends up
with your proton
peed on.
Pack.
That's right.
Egon.
I gotta tell you, it's been so many years now since I know they have. I know Tiger Stadium has it. But when you walk into a men's room and they just have a urinal,
big
I mean
trough.
A stall, a
the
trough,
big old trough,
just a big trough.
Oh, the one in the middle or the one against the wall?
Big one against the wall.
Against
like
the wall.
Just like one big trough. When
nowadays, it's been so long since I really see them very much. I walk in and I have just a little bit of fear. I kind of get in there and I kind of go.
Because there's nothing in between you and the next guy.
Little stage fright.
They
put tons of ice in there.
Some places
bars,
do.
Yeah.
And it's like, why would I want to pee on ice and have it like vaporize into my face?
It's part of the game.
My his vapor and everybody else's vapor?
The worst is, I was at the Superdome, and they have this big round thing in the middle. So I start peeing it, and the guy goes, that's where you wash your hands.
I'm telling
somebody's from the country.
There's so many drunk Saints fans. Hilarious. I'm pretty sure you're not the first one to do that.
You're not the first swamp dweller to walk into the Superdome and pee in the middle of things.
Yeah, they're probably just happy he made it into the room to pee, to be honest with you.
Man, yeah, I got engaged in New Orleans, and it was so jacked up because my wife knew I had the ring, and she was starting to get a little frustrated about me not proposing to her. Uh-huh. So I knew that she had this great childhood memory there. So I tried to, I'm gonna set up this cool thing. I had this like carriage ride, you know, at the sunset, mm-hmm. all this stuff planned out. And man, we walk out, we're walking down Bourbon Street, and this is supposed to be my big moment. And the first thing, right out of the bat, this guy's like, hey, how much alcohol would it take for you to drink to leave him and come with me? Oh. And she said, all of it. So I was like, good one. So then we start walking. All of a sudden, this other guy comes up. He's like, hey, I own a couple strip clubs in Canada. My guys would love you.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was like, dude, I'm standing right here. So I was like, let's get the hell off of Bourbon Street. Yeah. So we start walking over. And so I'm like, man, this isn't going as planned. Yeah. So all of a sudden, I go around the corner, and there's like 50 beautiful carriages all lined up. And you get in one, and sunset's starting to happen. And I said, honey, would you like a carriage ride? And she's like, nah. And I was like, what?
Nah, I want to go to Canada.
She's like, these horses belong in pastures, not walking streets of New Orleans.
Aww,
so we walk around the corner. And there's a fortune teller, and I said, and she keeps looking down at my pants pockets to see if there's a ring box, and there's not. So I could tell she's just not happy.
Yeah, she's
antsy. So I said, hey, there's a psychic over there. You want to go get our fortunes told? She goes, I don't want to know what my future holds.
Oh, wow.
So I ended up, I said, hey, well, maybe these ladies will take a picture of us in front of this Andrew Jackson fountain. And I said, ladies, would you mind taking a picture of us? Because we may be getting engaged. It's up to her. And she's like, what? So I pull it out. And I was already shook up. I usually don't get nervous, but I get down, I propose. So we have all these pictures. And I go back, look at the photos. I have two styrofoam cups full of frozen margaritas in one hand. And my ring in the other. And I was like, if we ever get lucky enough to have kids, no one's ever going to. They're like, what in the hell's dad holding?
I was expecting like fingernails in front of the pictures. Yeah. Isn't that the worst when you have somebody take a picture of your family?
Yeah.
You're at the beach. Hey, can you take a picture of all of us? Yes, absolutely. And you get it back, and it's a finger right across half the family. Oh,
yeah. And they're the only ones that can see the lens.
Yes.
And it's like, how did...
It's so funny that you tell that story, because your wife told me that on Facebook. We direct message each other.
She said that you help her get through the times I'm out of town.
Yeah, every time you're out of town, she always hits me up. I don't know. It's weird. Hey, what are you doing? I don't know. What are you doing?
Yeah, I'm just breathing in normal oxygen and exhaling legendary carbon dioxide.
Yeah. I always tell her that I'm rescuing puppies. She seems to like that. Yeah. She thinks that's so crazy.
Refugee puppies would be like everything combined that she loves.
Yes. All right, I think this is officially the record for our podcast.
Is it really?
It's up there.
80 minutes, something like that.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
No, for real. We've been here a while.
Wow.
Man, well, thanks for letting us thank you guys.
All right, guys, we're about to go on. We're about to do this now for real. Welcome to the podcast, everyone.
Okay. Here's the deal. Find your special someone. It got really easy. All you have to do is download the mobile app from Match.com. You can get your matches, like Patrick does, sent directly to your phone. It's awesome. And, if you're one of our podcast viewers here on Facebook or listeners on whatever podcast app you're listening on, well, then you get 7 days for free by just going to Match.com/Bubba. Match.com/Bubba. Take advantage of it. Get some free stuff. Everybody likes free stuff, right?
Yes, yeah. Bubba, yes, okay. We all want free stuff.
I was like, what kind of delay?
I don't know. I kind of like to play full price.
Okay, charge me more. Guys, thank you again.
Yeah, Lance Miller, Jared.
This is so much fun. Thanks.
Anything else we need to add before you guys walk out of here?
Make sure you get Jared's
God Made a Woman.
Yes.
Yeah, check it out.
It's a great song.
Thank you.
Follow Lance on Twitter. If you find his Twitter, can someone let him know what it is? I can't seem to remember.
Stay, and when you're hugging Craig Morgan on the road, be careful.
Be careful.
Yeah, yes. Right. Make sure he hugs you from the front, not from behind.
Yeah, don't do the prom pic with him.
Yeah.
And thank you, guys. and goodbye.
This was the podcast, but now it's over.
That's okay.
You can listen to the regular show.
Songwriting here.
On the radio.
Wait, you didn't get to hear this amazing songwriting.
Oh, put your headphones back on, Jared.
You songwriter guys, here you go.
I listened.
Wasn't that the same
it.
One that started?
No,
it's a different one. It's a closer.
It's a closer. That's a definite.
This was the podcast, but now it's over. But that's okay, because you can listen to the regular show on the radio. Every day, it was the podcast.
Thanks, Jared.
I love it.
Jared.
Kind of gave me that feeling of watching Seinfeld when they play that Green Day song on the outro. It's kind of got a little lonesome.
Dude, that's like Fairley Brothers movie good.
That's good stuff.